Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Morning. Hope you're all doing well. Today I'm going to talk on a koan from the Blue Cliff Record. And this is Blue Cliff Record Case 7, asking about Buddha. And I don't often talk about this this particular case because it's pretty short. You know, there's just really one main point. Today, that's good, as far as I'm concerned. All right, introduction. The unvoiced statement is not transmitted. Even the sages, if you have never seen it personally, it's as if it's worlds away. Even if you discern it before it is voiced and cut off the tongues of everyone on earth, you are still not naturally quick. That is why it's said, even the sky cannot cover it. Even the earth cannot support it. Even space cannot contain it. Even the sun and moon cannot illumine it. When you're independently worthy of honor, there is no Buddha. Only then are you getting somewhere. If not, then penetrate through on the tip of a hair and release great illumination and be free and autonomous in all things. Then, whatever comes to hand is it. But tell me, what do you attain to be so extraordinary? Does everyone understand? No one recognizes the sweating horses of the past. They only want to emphasize the achievement crowning the age. Setting aside the matter of the present for the moment, what about Secho's koan? Secho was the one that compiled it, as far as I remember. Is that right? Yeah, I think so. And he did the poems.
He did the poems.
That's Gavin. He's my truth fact collector in the back. Because I might be just lying through my teeth. The example now. Echo asked the teacher, what is Buddha? Hogan said, you are Echo. End of koan. Okay, the verse. In the river country, the spring wind hasn't stirred. Deep in the flowers, partridges are calling. When the waves at the triple floodgate are high, fish becomes dragons. Yet fools still scoop evening pond water. It's a nice poem. I remember when I was living down in Cornwall in England. I think it was the year before I went there, Trungpa Rinpoche came down to visit Bill Pickard, who used to run a group there that we used to go to every week. And so he visited, and he was wearing his monk's robes, the Tibetan robes, all maroon. He came in, and this lady started bowing to him profusely. And he's going, no, don't do that kind of thing. Don't do that. She continued, he sort of patted her on the head, you know. And then the story goes on. That's just part of it. So he gave a talk, and Bill Pickard had some pet rabbits. And the rabbits would play all over Rinpoche. They really liked him. And they would get inside his robes and everything like that. The only thing is that they actually pooped in his robes, and as it came time for him to leave, he got up and a few of these pellets kind of fell out of his robes. He goes, "The great Lama, he's just incontinent," you know. So I mean, I am actually addressing the koan here. Is that we tend to project all kinds of things onto people who are so-called spiritually adept, and it's not necessarily so. There's such a thing as respect, which is great, and then there are things where I go, well, I am not a person like that. I don't have the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness, you know, or the Buddha. I don't have that. But at some point, I will. I mean, the disease is right there. At some point, I will. What does it take? You know, I'm going to illustrate it with a few stories. When I first came to ZCLA, there were several carpenters that were kind of older than me, and they were really good, so I would tend to defer to them. And then one of them wanted to make this tensile structure up here, which cost, you know, $4,000 or so, and it took us 6 months to make it. It was based on Buckminster Fuller's twisted, parallelograms or something, or maybe not parallelograms, something a bit more close, oblongs, you know, and got all of that together. And there was a beautiful structure, and it only lasted a year or so. It was left out in the snow, and it just crushed. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of that. So at that point, Maizumi Roshi was asking everybody to do drawings for the new Buddha hall that was there. And I was going, well, you know, I'm only 28, 30. But then it was just like the other part was, I'm not going to let them do something so fill in the blank again. I'm going to do it. And so then we actually built a structure that only cost $5,000 and still standing today. The reason I'm saying this is not to denigrate the people that were doing that. It was just like, you know, I have a talent, I want to use it. Now, for each one of us, you know, it's like with this, what is Buddha? Is, you know, if not me, who? If not now, when? These were the words that deeply influenced Master Dogen. If not me, who? If not now, when? In AA, they have the statement, if you don't know how to act, you know, act as if, you know, in whatever way, you know, act as if. And in time, what happens is that then you be that, and then there's no problem with it. Now, being that from the start, then what do you do? I know for myself as a kid, I was educated that God was in everything. God and Buddha to me are not two different things, not the actual person, but that Buddhahood, or having this vast and empty mind, and I don't mean thought process in this case, this vast and empty mind. It was there with me. I would always ask these questions. My mother, you know, is, how come, you know, you say God's in everything, but I can't see him. But I could feel that, and that stayed with me all the way through my life. There was something there that I didn't fully appreciate. And a lot of life has been around that point. You know, how do I really appreciate what I have here? This divine nature that always is there. And then last few days, I've been looking at the ox herding pictures. And part of that is that I decided to approach it, seeing as though it is a process of self-discovery, rather than just interpreting the poems that, say, Kakuan and some of the other masters, including, I think, Kusan Sanim, who's fairly contemporary, died in the 80s. I decided to write poems of my own. I got into about three of them, And then started looking at that development of spirituality and how it occurs. You know, in the first painting of the Oxhurting pictures, the only reason that the young person that is looking for his nature doesn't see the traces of the ox or the bull is simply because he's not looking right down where the traces would be on the ground in front of him. He's looking off all over the place. You know, there's a story of an old priest who loses his keys, and you know, he's had a few, and he's off on this street, and he's looking around for his keys, and this guy comes up to him and says, "Father, why are you down on your knees?" He goes, "I'm looking for my keys." He goes, "Well, where did you drop them?" He goes, "Well, I dropped them on Hope Street." Well, why are you looking here? It's easier to see. But that is reflective of us as human beings. We look in the so-called easy places. Somebody, you know, it's written down in these books. Okay, I'll believe that. That's a lot easier than doing it myself. You know, the beauty of this koan is it's so direct. You know, the monk, let's see, H.O. comes up to Hogan, who's the founder of the Hogan School, or the Fayen School, if you use Chinese. And he says, you know, he's testing him. That's usually what koans are about. You know, he goes, "What is Buddha?" You know, and Hogan doesn't mess around. He's just very accurate, very honest. "You are Echo, you are Echo." He doesn't say anything about Buddha. "Why do you need something else? Why do you need some validation or some words from somebody else?" You know, we feel it in our bones right from the beginning. I mean, I was preparing the talk, I was just reminded of a song that was out in the 90s. And I asked Steph about it, and she said, you know, it's Faith No More, and it's called Epic, just to push the song, you know, for him. A bit old now. And he goes, you know, probably a bit late. He goes, "You want it, but you can't have it. It's in your face, but you can't grab it." You know, and he goes on, and he describes things. And it's that same thing, is we want something else. We want something objective. We want something to hold on to, rather than the meat puppet that is always functioning at 24/7. The one who sees through these eyes, the mountains, rivers, everything is manifested there. You can't lay something over the top of it. We have to talk about it in one way or another, because, you know, it seems natural for us to do as human beings. And this so-called spiritual practice has been going on for at least 5,000 years. You know, there's elements of that. It's been going on 5,000 years. People spending time to look into their own nature. In our own society, it's not valued. Why are you doing that? You know, why are you sitting and looking at your navel? That's what my cousin thinks I do. You know, sitting there looking at my navel. It doesn't go beyond that. You know, I'll tell him if he ever wants to. But that's the projection. That's what people do. And it's interesting, you know, in this particular case, and, you know, this is one of the best introductions in the entire book. In fact, even in the, including the Book of Equanimity too, it goes down. I mean, the whole thing is just packed with stuff. It's so good. It goes, "When you are independently worthy of honor, where there is no Buddha, only then you are getting somewhere. If not, then penetrate through on the tip of a hair to release great illumination and be free and autonomous in all things." And this is important, free and autonomous in all things. It doesn't mean that you're just good when you're meditating or in service or whatever, in all things. This is the challenge that Secho is putting out for us. Over 1,000 years ago. He's not saying that spirituality is a special thing, that you know, you it's just applicable to one or two things, and you just can't in the people around you, you know, because they already have it. No, these are practices. You do these things over and over. Things are embodied, and that's a beautiful thing. He goes, then whatever comes to hand is it. So there we go back to faith no more. You know, this is it. What is it? Etc. But tell me, what do you attain to be so extraordinary? I mean, you know, if you ever get in and listen to conversations of people that practice, they always go to the enlightenment experiences, you know. And then there was nothing. And people just, whoa, that's amazing. You know, I wish I had that. You know, well, my nothing's more nothing than your nothing is. And the attainment and all the stuff that we had to do to get there. All those wonders, that great thing. And at the same time, the Buddha is the one who's looking through your eyes. The one that you've tried for so long. And in this, I am also acknowledging the process, because there is a process where we have to wear out whatever it is that is our own barriers. You know, we have to acknowledge that fact. That process is important to us. Yeah, and if we didn't, those things would just run on in the back of our minds. There's many things to look at, is even one's thought process. People think it's just about creating space, but you also look at what you do with your own thought process. The barriers that you create in that process, the barriers that I created. I have to move through this, this, and this to get to this, a very linear way of thinking. Rather than going, don't introduce intoxicants. That's the root of that precept. Don't bring things in that distance yourself from yourself. That's the biggest gap between oneself and oneself. It's not between here and Antarctica. We create that far more in our own minds. We put in all kinds of obstacles rather than going, this is my thought process right now. And then in time, seeing how that works is you begin to realize I don't need to follow it. But until that is, you know, that until you really see that, is that this creates all kinds of emotions, it creates all kinds of separation, all kinds of difficulties, then we still follow those same patterns and we begin to believe them. And that's the sad part. You know, this is the way I am. This is what goes on. You know, somebody like maybe when you were at school was saying, well, you're stupid. I mean, that's from my era. You know, they would call you all kinds of things, you know. And if you believe it, that's a problem, you know. But if you don't believe it and you actually carry on and you do the best that you possibly can, then those things are not set in stone in yourself. And that goes all the way through practice. Even when people say, well, you're great. You're amazing. You have all of these things. If you know yourself, what the hell does it matter if you're great or whatever? You still are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. The wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. This is what the Buddha said right at the beginning. This is the basis of Buddhism. He didn't try and set up Buddhism. He just gave a fact. He gave an affirmation. You know, we tend to like affirmations nowadays. There's books written about them and all that stuff. But yeah, okay, then believe it. You know, I am Buddha. That doesn't mean you are something. On the other hand, it means that there is nothing here getting in the way right from the beginning. Hogan just says, you are echo. The Buddha's been wiped away in that way. The Buddha didn't exist 2,500 years ago. But the words that he spoke at that time still encourages today. I mean, the power of that practice that he did, that should never be buried. It's the power of his practice through 40 some years of practice till he died. Every day, you know, raising this up, whether he was meditating, whether he was teaching, whether he was walking, whether he was doing any kind of activity, was that not losing sight of this this wisdom and virtue, which is the very core of our lives itself, is here without fail. Now, in this, he goes on. No one recognizes the sweating horses of the past. They only want to emphasize the achievement crowning the age. So, you know, what is that part? I mean, look at what you've done as a human being to get where you are now. Just look at all the effort that it's taken. I don't want you to buy into a statement like this either, you know. But one thing is just let that shed light on where you are. And if you do allow yourself to sit in this place and experience this, what makes you different than a Buddha? That's what Buddhas have done. The only thing is the undermining thought process that goes on, that undermines that and distances ourselves. And at some point in time, I will become. That is the disease in itself. You know? And again, this is why concentration in Buddhism is so important. It's not necessarily just to concentrate on something like the breathing. It's so that natural aspect of who you are shines through everything else and becomes the most important thing. You know, just the breathing. The thought process isn't, again, leading us down all kinds of other places. Now, there's another aspect to this, which is quite often, is we want something rather than nothing. You know? So, you know, we're promised a lot of nothing in Buddhism. We'll become the great void, the great empty, vast and empty, all of these things, but it basically scares the crap out of us as human beings. That's one of the first things when I was studying, is I realized the stories that I told about myself never reached it, you know. And then when I saw that basic openness and emptiness there, which is the basis of all of living, it scared the crap out of me for a year or so, until it was befriended, until I realized that was there all the time. I'm not saying that was any kind of deep realization. What I'm saying was that basis was apparent, and then I didn't need to put thought over the top unless that was necessary. And then obviously as that becomes apparent, then it's a lot easier to enter into all kinds of circumstances without the story being told, well, I can only achieve this during meditation, you know, rather than, yeah, you know, the functioning, the same mind that sits meditation is functioning in everything else. I remember when I was Shuso in a mountain center in 1983. There's a character there that was really gung-ho and, you know, felt that not only himself, but everybody else should be sitting all the time. And we were just about to have a rainstorm, and the gap between the gaitan and the zendo was leaking. There's a lot of water pouring in there. So during the break, I got up on the roof and I was putting whatever material on. It was either silicon or Henry's, and I was putting that on, and he goes up, "You're Shuso, you should be sitting." And I'm going, "This is my Zazen." And that's true for me. That's what I was doing at that particular time. This is my Zazen. There's no other time, there's no other place. I take responsibility for repairing the roof because I feel that that's important. You know, and quite frankly, is that, you know, most of the practice at Mountain Center has been, you know, has been integrated with work all the way through. It's not that the meditation is regarded as something special. It's mainly done mornings and evenings. And then during the day, then that application in work and really seeing if concentration, if immersion, seeing if this Buddha mind is living as momentary activity, is the opportunity for that to to really become seamless in terms of one's own life. It's not that work is filling a space in between meditation. And I really want to emphasize that over and over. Is that it's not, I mean, a lot of people think that. They think you should meditate all day. Well, if you do not realize that your mind in itself is the Buddha or is awakened, then you can play that game for the rest of your life and abdicate your responsibility for functioning and seeing into the nature of, fill in the blank, for the rest of your life. If not me, who? If not now, when? Then things come to life. It's like with, you know, with carpentry, is that, yeah, I can go through things, I can do them. Or I can give life to them, and then beauty comes out of it. That's another level. It's the same thing. There is this moment in time. Ho hum. Yeah, everybody has it. Great. But then what do you do with it? Again, that's the cutting edge of Buddhism. It's not just being present and holding your mind like an iron wall. Yeah, I'm present now. Good. Well, you're present all the time. You know. Yeah, so what? It goes a lot further than that. It's a lot more subtle in that way. And at the same time, again, appreciate the efforts that you have done. Other people may not. You know? Really appreciate that. And be proud of those efforts that you've done in practice. Be proud to yourself, you know? Because we work through a lot, which otherwise would be acted out in the rest of our lives. You know? So this is that aspect, you know, the mind in itself is Buddha. You know, you are Anyo, you are Kugaku, you are whoever you are at ever that point. You can't be another way. It's complete in that way. It's like in the Oxford in pictures, you know, every single picture has a circle around it. And that circle is complete. It's complete. It cannot be another way. At this moment in time, it cannot be another way. These are the ingredients of living. You know? So what do I do with it? And the more you see this, the more you will see that wherever you stand, your life is complete. It doesn't mean that you don't have to do things and all that kind of thing, but it cannot be another way. This is exactly what I've got to do, work with as a human being. Now, you also have to remember is that there's also other human dynamics that go on, especially with our thought process. You know, these have to be recognized. It's not that they shouldn't be that way. People's minds work this way. You know, for instance, like if I get difficult circumstances, then people go, well, you know, maybe I won't practice because I might end up like him. No, I'm serious, you know. There was a guy, he donated all his stuff because he thought we were really cool, and the floods came and we were digging things out and he took them back. He didn't think we got the you know, the virtue of practice. We weren't being rewarded in a way. But I'm serious, you know, people look at it this way. You know, or difficult things happening, somebody dying. Some people thought that Maizumi Roshi was a bad teacher because he would get sick. You know, there's all kinds of things that humans bring up as excuses rather than this is what is happening now. This is exactly the work that needs to be done. You know, you are H.O. Period. You know, again, don't just swallow it that way. Just see why that is true. Why is my life and the life of the Buddha, why are they the same in that way? The Buddha had plenty of tasks in his life. You know, there's that nice koan where he's with Indra, you know, the king of the gods. I don't know why he's hanging out with gods, but, you know, he seemed to do that every now and then. And they were walking around, and originally the Buddha just migrated from one place to another as there was food, and so he wouldn't take too much from communities, and he moved around until at one point they decided, well, okay, let's, you know, hang out in one place, build these things that they call viharas or places of practice. And so he's walking around with Indra, and Indra, he says, the Buddha said, yeah, this would be a nice place for a temple, quite kind of innocently and innocuously. And Indra goes, gets a piece of grass, and being a god, he puts it in the ground and goes, the temple is complete. And so what did the Buddha do? The Buddha then smiled faintly. Because, you know, yeah, this might be a good place. Yeah, it doesn't matter where you are. Practice occurs. You know, as Dogen says, when you find the place that you stand, practice occurs, actualizing the fundamental point. It's true, you know. Now, if you take the analogy of Indra, you know, he's a god. You know, he can do miraculous things. For us humans, though, it's a little bit different. And the Buddha smiles faintly. Why is he smiling faintly? Because, yeah, he knows the God realm. He goes, that's all good, but we're humans. You know, what does that take? Even if you get a bunch of people together, there's going to be problems. And if you don't want to use problems, then use challenges. You can do that. That's a good positive thing. There's some challenges there. And that's why he had all of the Vinaya. And so, like, you know, 247 rules for men, 400 for women, you know. he's a sexist. But, you know, it's like, yeah, there's problems. We get together and we like to do the things that we like to do. And quite often we don't see the big picture. That's important, seeing the big picture. People go, they say to me, you know, you're so lucky to be living up at Mountain Center. On one level, I say, yeah. On another level, I go, God, just another day in paradise. You know, there's always things, no matter where you are. There's always challenges. There's always things that are going on. There's always fixing things. There's always communication of why things need to be done in certain ways. There's communication of histories, because certain things will happen if those communications aren't done. It's all in the life. And I'm not saying necessarily for me, because I don't really like the word Buddha. It's a foreign word. It's kind of odd, you know. But in the life of one who is awakened to this. Now, I can't say that I'm not awakened to this. But that's not something special to me. I was born with this. And it became apparent to me at some point in my life. And I don't take that as being any different than anybody else on this planet. You know, I am tension. This is the way it is. So, anyway, you know, this is a nice koan, and there's a lot more that can be said about it. Maybe I'll just have a quick look at the end, the poem. In the river country, the spring wind hasn't stirred. I mean, you might ask yourself these questions. Why is he talking about in the river country, the spring wind hasn't stirred? And then deep in the flowers, partridges are calling. What's that to do with you, Echo? When the waves at the triple floodgate are high, fish become dragons. Yet fools still scoop up the evening pond water. And part of this is you are Echo, you know, you are Shiro, you know, you are Asha, you are Liam, you know. It's not just, you know, I am who I am, this is what you get, like it or not. It's the whole world is our life. We should never forget that aspect. The whole world is our life. It shows up on a momentary basis. It's not just about the individual, the person. Everything's included in that. And then, you know, it's just like the triple, I'm not sure about the triple floodgate, but as human beings is that, you know, when the shit hits the fan, we rise to the occasion. It's like Tenke says in the commentaries, you know, set the bar high. You as a fish become a dragon. You show what's inside of you. This is a beautiful statement. And then he says the other side. This is what we tend to do as human beings, yet full scoop up evening pond water, which is, you know, usually a little bit toxic. We make ourselves small. I can't do that. How can my life be Buddha? You know, how can that be that way? But it's just another game. Saying you're a Buddha is a game. Not saying you're not a Buddha is a game. The important thing is, if you need to be something, be it, and be it to the hilt. Don't leave anything out in that process. All right, well, I think I've said enough for now. We'll bring it up for questions, and then maybe we'll go on from there.
Okay, so you can use the raise hand feature as we've been doing. You can unmute yourself and jump in, or you can ask questions through chat at this time.
Come on.
Tim.
Okay. Hey, Jerry.
Oh, I saw Tim. Tim's unmuted. Yeah.
Hey, Roshi.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Good.
You're looking good.
Thanks. You too.
Yeah.
So I had a question about, you're saying about work. Work is, it's not there just to fill space.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm being confronted with. You know, being at home and having all this free time.
Yeah.
I've got stuff to do, of course, and, you know, some fun stuff, seeing friends, family, cooking for parents, and some boring stuff to do, doctor's office, DMV. But then there's an awful lot of just free time. Like the past 3 days in a row, I've done absolutely nothing, it seems. And there's the impulse to fill the time.
Yeah. Well, and it really comes down to the point, you know, what do you want to do? How do you want to live? And then try and actualize that. So, I mean, the like in this koan is that it's talking about being awakened. So, you know, if that means something to you, then practice that in all activities. It doesn't really matter too much what you do, you know, but don't con yourself, you know. Try and awaken to whatever it is you do, rather than try and fill in the space. Yeah, you know, I remember when I was when I first started practicing, I tried to do without a lot of sleep, and at the time, I think I just got out of college and I had to go to a day release for my carpentry and joinery certification. And so because I'd started late, I was with a bunch of 16-year-olds. And so, you know, I could create a story around that, but being half asleep, I would make sure that I sat in the front and I tried to be as awake and aware as possible and wherever I could to interact with the teachers that were there. You know, that's an example of doing that. Now, boring then can change into something else. And you can actually bring circumstances and situations alive, which is then, you know, that's the fish becoming the dragon. In that part, you start to master your circumstance. You can help your parents. There's all kinds of stuff that you can do. Develop those bonds, you know. You've got a free open space there to develop what can loosely be called practice. And, you know, one of the deepest koans in the koan system is, I forget who it was now, but he goes, if you want to be a person of suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. Seeing as though you're already such a person, why worry about such a thing? But that, if you want to be awakened, enlightened, whatever you want, practice that. That much you know, practice it. And the thing is, if in time you'll see that there's no barrier or gap between yourself and yourself.
Okay, I'll work on that. Thank you.
Good. Don't work too hard. Right.
Thanks, Tim. Who's this? I can't see this name. Is it Kem?
What? Are we unmuted
now? Well, yeah. Go ahead, Lori, Dan and Lori.
Sorry, Dan. We have four hands here, and his were working.
Yeah.
Really helpful, so helpful. I'm really focusing and noticing how focus on what are you afraid of? You know, how that's really helping me so much, and working with you has been so helpful in that way. And this is also so incredible. And I just really want to get to that shutdown point. You know, like where does this shutdown point happen? Why do I stop believing, like, and, you know, you said it's just practice. You just have to keep practicing so that experience, tell me if I'm wrong, that experience actually overweighs what your mind wants to do with it for some twisted reason, you know?
Yeah, I mean, in time, as you realize that this has got a lot more dimension than anything I can conjure up in my head, you know? And I can move in many different directions in nostalgia or projection. It's a very small world,
mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
as much as I love, and I know I love to think and I love to create and all kinds of stuff. And it's beautiful, but it all comes from this.
Yeah.
And I remind myself about that constantly, you know,
yeah.
in that way.
All that other stuff gets so big, and it's just like it's astounding to me how impossible it is to get around that me at times. And, you know, it's just if I can just keep remembering that and just go back to the practice, strike the pose, just do it. You know, it's so helpful,
and it makes living a lot easier. You know, because I mean, and you know, in advertising, in politics, they always remember that we like to be distracted by all kinds of different things, and they try and distract us in ways that they want us to go. Whereas, if you really recognize that aspect of being awakened right from the beginning, a lot of satisfaction is there right from the beginning, and then the rest is just like, yeah, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. You know, it's, that stuff is going on constantly, you know, but if you really recognize what you already have, then it's hard to be seduced by that other stuff. And it becomes harder and harder in that way.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I like your new house, and I like your mask person there.
Oh, yeah, that's
mask
one. Yeah, Buddha.
Yeah, nice.
The mask.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's one of Laurie's paintings.
Yeah. But that's a bit like us, actually, is that we are masked Buddhas.
We are.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Laurie. Anyo, go ahead.
Anyo.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
You're
living in a world of light, according to this. It's all like bright.
I am. I'm a being of light. It's just the light through the... Well, my roof is off. It's not completely off, but...
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
There's even more light. Lori, I liked your comment about the where are those shutdown points? And we're just appreciating them. It's, you know, the mask's on, the mask's off. What happens right as we take it off? Which face appears? I think I spend a lot of my practice just appreciating those moments of, and I can't find them. I can't put my finger on them. Those moments of transition, of shutting down. And that's Buddhahood, that's what I consider my Buddhahood a lot of the time. I wanted to say, Roshi, that, you know, Yoan's Folly is one of those sweating horses, isn't it?
Well, I wasn't really saying that. You know, I was appreciating it. It was good working on it. This is more from a financial perspective. I mean, we've still got parts of that tensile structure which we're still using. So, you know, it's not in that way. You know, I mean, I really appreciated the geometry of that. But it was a hell of a lot of work welding that together. I mean, actually, I didn't do the welding. I did some of the other stuff. Yeah. I think that was Doe, if you remember him. Yeah.
Yeah, vaguely. Yeah. Well, it certainly gave us light in a beautiful way.
If
only briefly. But that's the sweating horses.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, appreciating that has gone before.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, is that this moment in time doesn't just appear, you know.
Never. It's always based on other things. So I'm really grateful to you
and all
that came before. thanks.
All right. Thank you. Glad I didn't have to say much.
Winston, you're unmuted.
Winston?
Yeah.
Hi.
So I noticed when I'm sitting, I got injured this week, and I was wondering about something. I noticed now that when I'm sitting, my breath is very rapid.
Yeah.
And I know that it's partly due to, my blood pressure is higher because of this injury that I've got.
Yeah.
I was wondering, I'm assuming you're going to say, like, you know, that's just something you have to sit with and then just kind of like, like over time, I don't know, over time it'll get better or something like that.
Well, I mean, first thing is, realize that this is a snapshot in time. You know, this is the way it is right now. It's not necessarily going to be the same way for the rest of your life, you know. So the important thing is see how that breathing functions. And quite often is if you don't pay too much attention to it being more rapid, is that it'll begin to settle and become less rapid. You know, now there's other elements there. I mean, if you're taking any medication, that might be causing some of that too. But the thing is just rather study it, see how that functions. It should be a certain way. Remember when I first started sitting, people saying, "Well, your breathing should be slow and deep," you know. So then I tried to make it slow and deep, which wasn't a good thing. And that culminated eventually as I was going, "Well, I'm going to really now focus on the breathing. I'm not going to lose count, etc." And I got so much pain in my chest from trying to force breathing rather than the breathing be natural that I just basically just gave up with any kind of control, you know, and then let natural breathing occur. Now, sometimes breathing's fast, sometimes it's slow. The important thing is that you're present to it and you understand it. And to give you a traditional story too, there was we had this old Roshi who was a student of Harada Sogaku Roshi's, when he came, he was in his 80s, and when he sat down with us, He was breathing like a dog. He was basically panting. You know, he's sat there in half lotus, and he's. But it wasn't a problem. You know, he probably had, you know, emphysema or something like that. But he was sitting and he was just appreciating, you know, his own being in that way. So don't worry about those things. You know, is that. Your breathing will naturally go into its own rhythm, and so let that occur. And in terms of longevity of practice, is that eventually you won't try and force your breathing deep or shallow. It'll be as it is, and over time it tends to go a little bit deeper.
Got it.
Great, thanks. There's a couple of you were switching around there.
I saw an empty chair.
Yeah.
I picked up your book, by the way. And I'm going through it.
It's small, so it's good. Yeah. It's not too thick. Yeah. I was looking at it the other day. I was going, damn, you know, I used to be pretty intellectual when I was younger. I could actually write and stuff. I was surprised. I was going, wow, you were good in those days. The fast horses of the past. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Winston.
Thank you.
There was someone else unmuted. I don't know if it was they want to unmute again. Maybe it was a Sarah. I'm having a hard time seeing the screen. Otherwise, we do have some questions in chat, so I'll read Edward. Edward asks, recently my wife and I spent a great deal of time imagining that life could be better elsewhere in the UK where my family are, or someplace else, as long as it's not here. Is there no elsewhere then? Why am I drawn back?
There's elsewhere. You know, I mean, there's always elsewhere. I mean, I always look at things and, you know, it's like for me is that, yeah, it might be easier if I go somewhere else, but that somewhere else now is getting, you know, it's like everywhere else has got problems in one way or another. So it's far more important for me, firstly, to actually experience those difficulties and try and deal with them first. And then if I move somewhere else, then I'll be able to do the same thing. So that's the first thing that I look at. So, you know, anyway, that's my answer to that. But, yeah, there's always other places. I mean, go, if there's a place that really resonates with you, go. Yeah.
Pierre, I believe this is Pierre. Aggression in work. I don't think this is a question. Aggression in workplaces. Nietzsche on. You stare long enough into the abyss, fighting monsters. Make sure you won't be like one. All right.
Well, that was Nietzsche. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the main thing is with that thing is that. Do you want to be like that? I mean, don't practice aggression as a first or second tactic. You know, the aggression is at the end. You know, the first thing is to see if you can work and build bridges, because basically one's own life, other people are included in that life. So it's very important to practice the way that you really want to be in your own heart. I mean, I don't want to practice aggression. I know where it leads. Okay.
All right, thanks. Liam, I saw you had unmuted yourself. I don't know if you had a question.
Hi there. Yes.
Hey, Liam, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, I was willing to raise why I unmuted myself, just to say.
Yeah.
And thank you for that very kind of direct reminder of, you know, who we really are. It's so easy to forget, but yeah, no, it was just so direct. And that's what I really like about the Zen.
Yeah. Well, I was saying I could be a lot more direct. I could have stopped after "You are Buddha," and that would have done. Yeah, you know, I was basically filling in half an hour or so with other things. Yeah.
But it's kind of a constant reminder, isn't it?
So yeah, you just
kind of sort of have to keep repeating yourself, but it's the way you tell it. You know,
thank you.
It's interesting. But I just wanted to ask, because my practice, you know, I mean, I started off as a you know, indoctrinated Catholic.
Yeah.
But as you were saying in what you were saying, you know, like God was everywhere, and I was in that same situation where I kind of felt there is something there, you know. It's not, this just didn't come out of nothing.
Yeah.
It's just like an inner feeling that mm-hmm. I could recognize. But looking at what was going on around me, it just wasn't happening. You know? So
yeah,
my practice now is really, you know, I've opened up to all of our inspirations, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Like Buddhism and the Zen particularly is mm-hmm. so direct. That's what I really love about it. But my practice is kind of more to do with, I'm definitely doing a lot more sitting than I did, and the COVID thing has happened with that, because I'm not rushing around, I can do as fly. And,
yeah.
distracting myself, so that's good.
Yeah.
But the I'm doing a lot of study with different teachers, so I'm looking at you know, some of the living ones at the moment. Like Eckhart. Not Master Eckhart, now present day Eckhart. Eckhart Tolle. There's a guy called Prem Rawat. But anyway, he comes from an Indian tradition. But they're all coming from the same place as what you're coming from, or what Buddha is coming from, and they're talking to me. So there's a oneness. I've got a mathematical kind of mind of integration, you know, so like it all leads to one, and that's kind of my practice. And you know, so I'm not following just one teacher. Some teachers are very pernickety about you must follow one. Otherwise, it's a diversion. But I'm not going off course by looking around and having seeing what's going on in the world.
This is where I duck out the way and then just reflect that right back at you, you know.
Okay, that'll do.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the main thing is you always remember when you get an advice, it's all motions. You know, look at the thing in you that's always still, that's always here.
The first one I remember from way back, you know, was from Christianity and Jesus saying, you know, the kingdom of heaven is within. And that's as direct as what you just said. It's right here. You know, it's not anywhere else.
Yeah, and that's important, you know, so you don't get distracted by all kinds of methods. You know, the important thing is that whatever methods you do, always remember you're not going anywhere else.
No. Anyway, it's focusing me, and this Sunday night thing is Sunday night.
Yeah, for you it's Sunday night.
Just getting together like this and listening to such direct, you know, contact with what's real. Is like it focuses attention in a really, really good way. So,
thank you. I think you brought back some of your kids or your grandkids with you. You're looking younger.
Oh God, it was fantastic. You know, like it was a bit like the Charge of the Light Brigade. It was COVID to the right, COVID to the left, COVID in front, COVID behind. And I was driving in my little Honda Civic.
Yeah,
I didn't have a big Dodge Ram. But I did.
I don't think it discriminates that way, Liam. So no, I think you're good. You know.
But it was like a little bubble. You know, I was in a bubble of not contact.
Okay.
It's kind of cool.
Good.
Anyway, I saw them all and they're all there, and they enjoyed seeing me as well. So I think I brought some of myself then. I brought some.
Good. All right.
Great to be back.
Great. Take care, eh?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Liam.
Yeah.
Omar.
Hello.
Hey, hi, Omar.
Everybody. Hello, sir. Roshi. So I wanted to see if you could comment on something that happened to me just yesterday. I normally meditate in my house, in my room. I'm staying at my parents' home right now. I live in Brazil, but I've been staying here at my parents' home in California. And my house has had a lot of conflict. The people in my house, my mom, my dad, and my brother, have been in a lot of conflict lately. I'm doing my best to help them, but I'm also doing my best to kind of stay out of the way and let them try to resolve their own problems on their own. That's kind of the lead-in for me to tell you about my kind of funny experience yesterday, which I think is relevant. I was trying, in the middle of all the shouting and stuff here in my house, I had closed my doors, I had closed everything, I put on these... You know, I'm a musician, so I do these noise-canceling headphones that are all, you know, fancy, and I had tried to focus on a guided meditation that I was trying to listen to, but I could still hear the clutter of of, you know, the kind of booming voices underneath it all. And I had decided that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to do that here. I wasn't going to be able to have some peace of mind here. So I just picked up a book that I'm reading, which is Pema Chodron's When Things Fall Apart.
Yeah.
And I took it to the park. And across the street from the park is another grassy area, like a little knoll. And I didn't want to go to the park because I'm so paranoid about COVID-19 that I was like, I'm just going to stay away from where people go. So I'll just stay on this side. And I had sat under a tree and I started reading and I noticed that I was getting all of these ants on me, you know, and I'm doing my best to follow some of the basic precepts here and trying not to kill things, you know. So I was trying to brush these ants off of me and trying to read at the same time. And it occurred to me that maybe I was kind of a fool for having sat on an ant hill, you know? So I moved to another tree, but there was another ant hill. And then I sat on another tree and there was another ant hill. So after three moves, I eventually made my way across to the park where I sat at a park bench and finally read in peace for 2 or 3 hours without much of a problem with ants. But I have to say that what came to me was this idea that I felt a little bit like a charlatan, because in the process of brushing off these ants, I might have killed about 10 or 20 or 30 of them, you know, or at least crippled some of them or something, you know. And I felt like a little bit of a charlatan at that moment, you know. And something you mentioned earlier today was something that I would put in my own words would be this kind of fake it till you make it, right? This kind of idea, well, you know, if you're going to try to do something, or if you're going to try to be something, well, go ahead and even if you can't, like you say in the AA quote, right? Even if you're not that thing, just try to be it until it becomes something, right? So I'm just wondering if you could maybe comment a little bit on this feeling sometimes of charlatanism, you know? And I noticed, I've read actually about this kind of charlatan syndrome or this charlatanism syndrome. Of people who are really actually very good at what they do. For example, me as a musician or as an editor or whatever, and certain moments where you have a crisis where you go, shit, maybe I'm not that good at what I'm doing. You know, actually, maybe I suck at
this. Now, remember, you're dealing with narratives here.
Right.
And then, you know, when it's like fake it till you make it is really, really be yourself. You know, be genuine in that way. That's what we're talking about. It's not becoming something else that looks like a Buddha. It's that really be yourself. It's in that same process. If you're a musician and you do that, your music's a lot more authentic because you're really coming from the place you stand. Don't be afraid to feel emotion. Like when your parent, I mean, that used to mortify me as a kid when my parents were arguing, you know, in those ways. But part of it I learned was just to really feel that and be genuine about my own feelings. And try and communicate that wherever I could. And it's the same thing now, is that I may have mixed emotions about certain things, but I always go on, what's the real emotion that's going on? And try and communicate that, whether I appear as a dork or whatever. You know, the important thing is to be genuine in how I am. And then, you know, in time it becomes a lot easier whether, you know, people are looking at you in a higher way or a lower way. You know, we're going up and down in the eyes of others all the time. But if I'm true to myself, then there's no loss there, you know?
Yeah, I hope that I'm being true to myself. I mean, I think that I have a practice that I think that for me is respectable and feels very genuine, you know? I really do my practice every day. I really try to do my readings and I try to be informed and I try to participate here and I try to, you know, stay engaged in the culture of what I'm trying to get involved in. Even though I am a very kind of solitary person, I am trying my best here, but, and it feels genuine, but it's just like this concept, this idea of following the precepts sometimes, follow them to the best of my extent.
And remember, nobody is perfect with the precepts. I mean, that's why we have that ceremony, renewal of vows, is that we make mistakes. I mean, even if it's calls, you know, people are at the effect of missed calls that I do, you know. So the important thing is to go, I messed up there. I'll do better next time. And that's the important thing. Nobody has is like perfect all the way through. And if they are, it's time to extend their sphere beyond that small part that you're so successful in. You know?
Thank you very much,
Richard. It's got to come from the heart, you know?
I try my best. Thank you.
Thanks, Omar.
Thank you.
Oh, wow, it's a long one. Just a few questions in chat, and then Winston asks, is there any correlation between sitting practice and improved mental health, like depression, bipolar?
I'm sorry, I was reading another one. Can we hear Steph's rendition of Faith No More? I think I'd rather hear that. No, sorry, go on, we'll do that. You can sing it if you want, you know.
I think I sang it at Brewpub one night, yeah, just song. Like let loose. Is there any correlation between, yeah, sitting practice and improved mental health?
Yeah, there is. You know, I mean, we've had several people that are, I think they were using the word schizophrenic for these these people that stayed at the center. And there was a marked improvement to the point where one of the guys that he was having an evaluation, he had to take Jimson weed to so he could stay on benefits. You know, there was that aspect. But that's another mental thing that needs to be dealt with. But we've also had others that they've done the meditation practices, and also what I tend to do with people that are bipolar, depressed, what was called schizophrenia, give them manual work rather than thinking work. And what happens then is immediate feedback from the environment. And over time, that really seemed to work well with people. So, yeah, I mean, definitely it does work. And part of it is, you know, the main thing is just encouraging people not to believe the narrative that's going on, because that usually leads to the worsening of the situation.
Thanks, Roshi. Jerry asks, in light of today's koan, would you speak on the many koans where a student asks the teacher for instruction and all the teacher does is call out the student's name?
Jerry.
All right.
No, I mean, the thing is I'm not here to make, you know, make your life better. You are. You know, I'm just a mouth. And maybe a little encouragement there. The work's done by you. It's never the teacher. You know. I'm a little bit more dangerous because I'm not dead.
Okay, Marie asks, I came into the talk this morning planning to ask you for pointers on how to practice with doubt, because it feels great. On the heels of a good 9 months of looking through the eyes of faith and patience that I switched suddenly a few days ago into the field of doubt, mostly self-doubt. Quite a large field, maybe with a few oxen standing out in it. But your entire talk seemed only to cast light on the question I hadn't asked. So thank you, Tenshin.
So do I need to answer that?
I don't know. I just read. I thought.
No, but doubt, you know, that's always there. I mean, it's important because that's how we refine practice. You know, faith, you know, that much that I know, I practice it. Doubt, if I doubt something, then quite often I've got to turn it back on my own, tactics of how I live my life. And if those tactics are not working, then I've got to look at my view of, say, the teachings or how I've taken practices being something. What I learned, you know, probably about midway through my practice was that if Zen didn't do something for me, it was my responsibility to fill in those gaps. So it wasn't like Zen works or it doesn't work. Is that that there are basic ways that we have inherited Zen practice from, like in my case, from a Japanese teacher or several Japanese teachers, But that doesn't mean that that's the only thing of Zen. There's many different teachers all over the place. So if I see that something works for me, like in my case, voice dialogue, I practiced that for many years, and I still do every now and then. But to keep the tradition intact, I don't mix them up. I don't say, well, you know, this is part of the Zen tradition. No, it's, I use that. And I also have used the things that I've learned in my life in various ways that, that I employ with that. Because Zen will never do something for you. You are the embodiment of Zen in whatever way you are. So that doubt, if something's not quite working, see why. You know, that's that aspect that the Buddha talks about when he you know, is usually translating, this is the fact of suffering. Basically, literally said, this one here is a stuck axle wheel. And that's another aspect of practice. How do I get this wheel to turn? You know, so if something's not working, that's the cutting edge. That's exactly where to look. Anyway.
That's great.
Yes. That's, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's everything.
Hey, it's good seeing you, Deb. Thanks for joining us today. You doing all right? Yeah, good. Love seeing your smile. Yeah, good. These tears to my heart.
Well, that's why I can't speak.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, my favorite part is this red that is surrounding you. It's just like, you know.
Yeah, I got tired of black and white. Red. You know,
The couch, the painting, and inspiring. Besides the words, but thank you very much. I've been trying to get here, and here I am.
Great, it's really good seeing you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Oh,
yeah.
We've gone on. Okay, we just open it up for conversation now. If you want to join in.